We're ready if you are. We're going to go ahead with our next feature here, and Miss Iris Wall, who's going to tell stories of cracker life. Thanks for helping us, Norman and Willie. It's been a real pleasure. These guys have been great this weekend. Thanks a million. Just sit down. We'll take a seat, and we'll just pass this mic back and forth. I'll start off with a brief introduction. Iris Wall owns the High Horse Ranch down in Indiantown, down near Lake Okeechobee. She is also on the board of directors of the Florida Cracker Horse Association, or are you vice president?
I'm on the board of directors of the Cracker Horse Association.
Yeah.
Vice president
of the Florida Cracker Cattle Association. And let's go all the way back, if we could. We were talking earlier today about one of the roughest ways I can think of to make a living. You camped for 5 years with your husband in near Immokalee, and you were cutting fence posts for a living?
Yep. I went down there when I was, I had a baby 3 months old, and Homer went down there to work for Daddy, and so it didn't take me long. I'll have to tell you this. I had a 47-year love affair. Never loved nobody else in my whole life except him. And he didn't stay down there very long before I began to make arrangements to go down there. And I went down there, and we camped down there at the end. If you know about Immokalee, we camped right at the end of the oil well grade for 5 years. And I had another child while I lived down there. And she was born in Lee Memorial Hospital over in Fort Myers. And we had no electricity, no running water, no nothing. We just camped. And I'll tell you, it gave me a great appreciation for good warm water. I never turn it on that I don't appreciate it. Never turn on a light I don't appreciate it. But you know, that camp became home to us. And no matter where we would go, we would be excited to get home. And it was never a hardship for us to live down there. A lot of people think that would be a hard life. But it was, you know, I look back on it. It hadn't been too long, and my sister took me down there and showed me where we used to camp. And I stood there and looked out across those cypress, and I just couldn't help but cry. And she said, "Well, I wouldn't have brought you down here if I knew you was going to cry." And I said, "Well, tell you the honest truth, it just reminds me when Homer was young, and our children were young, and what a good time we had down here. We just had a really, sometimes the hardest times in your life, when you look back on them, are the best times of your life. And this is the way it was with me."
Well, tell us about, how does cutting cypress, how does that work?
Well, in those days, there was no treating. You know, you didn't treat, you cut the heart. The tree was dead, and all the bark had fell off of it, and it was just a pine. It was heart of pine and heart of cypress. And we called them, if they built for cowpen gates and stuff like that, they were 10-foot long posts, probably 8 inches around, you know. But the smaller ones were 6-foot long, and they were probably 2 to 3 inches around. And it was just something that a lot of people, you know, anybody that fenced their land, you realize that fencing did not become necessary in the state of Florida till 1949. And in 1949, if you hit a cow before that, it was just your hard luck. You paid for the cow. But after 1949, if you hit a cow, it was a rancher's hard luck, and he paid for the cow. But we had begun to fence long before that, but in 1949 it became mandatory, so people had to fence their land, and that's what we did. We cut fence posts, and you know, we cut them with an axe. And you think that's hard, but you know, Homer was about 6'1", and a great, big, strong, healthy guy, and he could cut a post with 3 licks. two on one side, the next one brought her down. And it was just, you know, it was easy for him to cut fence posts. Now today you'd probably use a chainsaw, but in those days you cut them with an axe. And if you look out in old woods, anywhere you see an old fence, you look and see if it's cut with a chainsaw, it's a recent post. If it was cut a long time ago, it's cut. We went down there in 1950, so, you know, that's been a long time ago. We sold them to ranchers. Daddy sold them. We cut for Daddy, and Daddy sold them. And we semi would hold 1,000 posts. And many, many times Homer would cut. He always cut 200 a day. And when he would come home at night, he would load that 1,000 posts on that semi at night. Now, can you imagine that? But he did it plenty of times. We eat just like we did today, rice and tomato gravy and cornbread. We always laughed at Betty Mae Jumper. She's the only woman, the Seminole tribe, that's ever been the chairman of the Seminole tribe. And once, many, many years ago, way back in the early 80s, me and her was at some big convention thing. I forgot now what it was. And this woman come by and she says, real prissy-like, she said, "What does Indians eat?" And Betty Mae said, she thought for a few minutes, and after a while she said, "Well, tell you the truth, I like a baked potato and a steak." When they were talking about Seminole ranching, I thought to myself, them Seminoles ranch just like we ranch. Ranching's ranching, honey. Don't matter who does it. Well, we quit cutting posts about 1955, and we come back home to Indiantown. I was born and raised in Indiantown. I was born there November 23rd, 1929. I'll be 78 November 23rd. And we've always had some cattle, but we never could make a living with cattle. Now, if you make a living with cows, you either have to make your money somewhere else and buy your land, or else you have to inherit it. Or you have to marry it. There's no other way in this world you can own land. So we didn't ever own any land. We ranched, though. All of our life we had some cattle. And we'd move them on leased land. We had them on leased land and this, that, and the other. But Homer came home and went to work for Mr. Troop. And I was just telling Willie and them that... I drove the school bus for 7 years after we come home in 1955, and we always visited the camp of Billy Bowlegs. Every single year we visited, we'd go over and visit him. And you would have to know him. He was a tall Indian, had a little old mustache, and he would stand there. He had the neatest camp you ever seen in your life, just a little old pumpkin patch and this little old, and he had one chick he eat in and one that he slept in, and everything just as neat. And I always took the third grade, and one year they dug a big deep canal on the Brightonton Reservation and threw up a road that we, and so I was driving this 66 passenger bus now to take the third grade out to see Billy Bowlegs, never even dreaming there'd be no way to turn around when I got way back in there. And I'm telling you, I had to back that bus probably 10 miles. My neck has never been the same since. Miss Martinez threatened to kill every kid on there but finally we got out of there. But we drove the bus and Homer worked for Mr. Troop. Mr. Troop wanted him to go to work for him, so... Then we had a preacher that was a chemical engineer, and, you know, we just got all excited. We thought Indiantown was going to grow, which has never grown an inch even since then. But they said it was going to have all this boom and all, and they said, "Homer, you should go to work out at Pratt Whitney. So Homer went out there and took a job. Now, he's a cowboy at heart. They still call him Cowboy and Stewart, always have. But he took a job out there, and he put the diagram of the plant on the wall, worked shift work, started as a janitor. Within a year, he was a plant manager. He learned how to work that plant. He learned a diesel engine, absolutely how to work a diesel engine. And he had an uncanny ability to work men. He loved men. You know, he's one of the few people I've ever seen in my life that love men and use money. Usually they love money and use men, but he was just the opposite. And he went to work with him. We worked with him a year, and we were at Cape. They had sent us from Vandenberg Air Force Base. He taught the Air Force how to work these little hydrogen plants they had at Air Force bases. And we traveled around. I got pregnant with the third child. We had three children on that trip around. And we came back to Cape Canaveral. And when we were out at Vandenberg Air Force Base, they wanted us to go to Italy. And Homer said, listen, when we get this plant on the line, I'm going to Indiantown. Don't make any difference to me what happens in the world. I'm going to Indiantown. So when we got through, we went to Cape. They made us a place in Cape Canaveral. And we stayed down there a year, and then they said, somebody called us and they said, a lumber yard would be a good place, Indiantown would be a good place for a lumber yard. Now, not a thing in the God's world there but a palmetto patch. If you've ever been there, you know. But they said it's 25 miles from West Palm Beach, 25 miles from Okeechobee, 25 miles from the Glades. It'd be a great place for a lumber yard. So we prayed and thought about it and went to see our banker, and he said, cowboy, go for it. So we went home and started a lumber yard, and we've been in business 46 years. We have six Ace Hardware Ace Hardware stores and lumber yards, and the Lord called him home in 1994, and I thought it was the end of my life. I married him right out of high school. He was my complete life, everything. And then the Lord called him home. He had pancreatic cancer. He was gone within 3 months. And so I looked at my life and I said, you know, Iris, you had a good life for 18 years. And then you had a wonderful life for 47 years. So what are you going to do with the rest of it? So I said to my children, you all run the lumberyard and I'll be the cowboy. In the meantime, we'd bought a ranch there in Indiantown. And so really that's what I've done. I've run the ranch. And I will tell you this, that God has been so good to me. I've had a wonderful life. The men of the state of Florida took care of me. That's the truth. Everywhere I go and I have a need, somebody always is there to take care of it. I'm the only woman they've ever had on the board of directors for the Cracker Horse Association. The only one, I guess, in the Cracker Cow Association in that capacity. And I've just had a good, good time. I work in the Farm Bureau at home, and I'm a lover of children. I love children. And so, therefore, I built me a wagon, and I take the school children. They come on field trips. I teach them how to brand cattle. I teach them, they were asking about the mark, and I thought to myself, you know, a lot of those children are ethnic children. But listen, this America's going to be their history. We've got to teach them how to love our country just like we love it. And we're going to be their history. And I teach them, I say, on the shoulder, you put the number, that's the year they were born. On the hip, you brand them with your own brand that you have to register in the state of Florida. And I got this big old brand book, and I let those children look up the brand, and they see my name, they're so excited about it. And they find it out. I take them on the wagon. We drive out, and this is just how quick they are. Within just a few minutes, they'll say, Miss Iris, that cow's 4 years old. That's just how quick they can pick up on that, you know. I teach them that I don't mark that much anymore because my cattle are fenced in. But the mark used to be, and where they have a lot of different cattle on the reservation that has different owners, they still have to mark. Because when a cow throws her head up, you can't always see that brand on her hip, but you can see that head. When she holds that head up and you look at that mark, you know the owner of that cow right then. And I have enjoyed it. I've enjoyed my life, and I've had a good time. God has been good to me. And I love the woods, and I love Florida, and I want to tell you all this. If you don't own but 1 acre of land, you try to keep it green. try to take care of it. And if you go, if you're a hunter and you kill one deer, that's enough. Don't keep killing every deer we got in the state. And if you conserve your water, we're about to run out of water. Everything man touches, he destroys. Be a keeper of the land. I love the state. I love the woods. And that's why I spend my money and my time and travel around and try to promote the state of Florida. There's nobody in this state of Florida that loves it no more than I do. And I am for it. God bless you for listening to me.
Thank you, Iris. I don't know how close we are to having the band set up. We're getting close.
Yeah, they're about to set up.
We got a couple more minutes. Do you have any good alligator stories? You must.
If it hadn't, you know, when you work for $150 a month and you can get $35 for a 5-foot alligator, you know darn well you're going to gator hunt, don't you? You're going to gator hunt. Well, I grew up gator hunting. We had, that's how we bought many pairs of shoes. That's how we bought the Baptist. That's how we built the Baptist church in Indiantown. It's always been against the law, but we've always been always gator hunters. And you know the thing about a gator is this: that at night you can see their eyes. You see how red their eyes get at night. Well, we hunted with a headlight at night, and you got to shoot a gator right in the right place. If you shoot him any place else except right in his eye, you ain't gonna kill him. I can tell you that. He's got a head as hard as anything, and he's got a brain about that big. So you got to hit him right there. Well, one year, me and Homer, and later on he was a sheriff of Martin County. See, I've been here a long time. You got to understand this, a long time. And we were hunting out by Jupiter, and we was out on a ditch, and they had shot about a 10-footer, and we knew he was a big gator. And a lot of times a big alligator has got a button hide, and he's not as you can't get the knock off on that hide. It's got to be just right. About an 8-footer is a perfect size to sell the hide. But anyhow, this was about a 10-footer. Well, now when you shoot them, they go to the bottom of the water. They go down to the bottom of the ditch. They got to come up pretty soon, but they go down there. And if you're really, really careful, you can ease your foot along. You can wade in the ditch like this and ease your foot along the bottom. And when you lift him up real slow, he ain't even got enough sense to know he's being lifted up, see? And he's real, and you just get him right to the top and chop him right behind the head. You got him, see? So Homer and James was in there going back and forth. We knew we had shot this gator, and we was pretty sure we had wounded him. And so Homer said to me, "You keep the headlight on. You know what a headlight is. They put it over your head like that, and it's a light that runs off of a battery." He said, "Now keep it on the water, Iris." I said, "Okay, okay." And here I am squatting down here, and I got the headlight on, you know. And I got. He said, "Keep the light on the water." And I look around. I can't help it. But the biggest fights we ever had in our life was about that, or backing up a tractor. He gave the worst directions in the world. But anyhow, he said, keep the light on there. And I did it. All at once, I just happened to glance down, right down there, and he was right between my legs. And I said, "Oh, here he is. I said, let me shoot him. He said, no, don't shoot him. Because, see, they got such a hard head, the bullet will shimmy off and could kill him, you know. And he said, no, don't shoot him. So here I am sitting here, and here's the gator right between my legs, and I've got the light, and I'm doing all this hollering and screaming. And Homer and James get out. Well, they shoot him again, and they drag him up and lay him on the bank. Well, we hunt on down the ditch. James, both of them tall fellas. James in the middle. I mean, Homer in the first, and Homer's got the light on. James here, and me dragging along behind, see? And we go down and hunt a while, and we don't see nothing, so we turn around to go back. Well, lo and behold, he just kind of holds his head up like that, and here comes that gator, just walking on all 4 feet out like this. And I go to screaming. I climb clean over James, all over Homer, and everything else. We finally get the gator killed. And Homer said later on, he said, "Honey, I don't know where in the heck you was going, but you was getting there fast." Oh, Lord have mercy. I'm telling you right now, I was going somewhere, but we were gator hunters. You know, when you're desperate for money, honey, you'll hunt a gator. And we got to laughing. This old game warden out there in Indiantown, he was the only flying game warden they had in South Florida for years and years and years. And we went hunting in Hungry Land Slough. And Daddy was going to hunt on down the slough. There's only one cabbage hammock in all of Hungry Land Slough. It's just pure cypress. And he said, now, when the midnight train runs, he said, get up and build up the fire so we can find this hammock. And we said, yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it, you know. Well, lo and behold, the train run all night long. Every time we'd just about get to sleep, it was freezing cold. All the dogs laying around us and all, another train had come. And we'd get up and cook some more Spam. I never eat Spam since that night. We'd all the Spam we had in the world. And I wrote this little old book, and I said, I don't believe that fire hunting was against the law in them days. And I got this call from old Cossie Conrad. He said, Iris, you know damn well it. Fire hunting's always been against law. But we were gator hunters now. We were gator hunters, and we caught many gators. We were laughing about Teresa Douglas that come and cooked the swamp cabbage with us today. Me and her's been friends for 55 years, and her husband, Harold, was a gator hunter, too. And so they put out these traps, and she always tells this tale that her oldest son was just a little teeny boy, and if you catch an otter in a trap, you got to get to him real fast. If you don't, he'll chew his leg off. And so Teresa got out there real early in the morning. It was freezing cold, and she said that she had an otter called. Harold had to go to work, and she said she called Stevie, and she said, bring me the gun, bring me the gun, and said, here's poor little old Stevie. He's probably not 3 years old, dragging that gun out there. Said he could have killed himself, you know, but you never think of those. you never think of those things when you're growing up. One more gator tale, and then I'm going to close. One more. There was an old man in Indiantown called Johnny Flowers, and him and Homer was working on this machine, and they knew there was a big gator in this hole, and they watched him for about a week, and they did everything they could think of to try to trap him, you know, and they never could. They never was smart enough to get him. So finally Homer said, I tell you what I'm going to do, Johnny. I'm going to crawl. See, you have a hook. You catch him. You have a gator prod that's got an iron rod. And if you get down in back of the gator cave, you can, a lot of times you can rod him and he'll come out, see. Well, they tried everything they knew. So Homer said, I'm going to go in there after him. Said, you give me this. Said, I'm going to take this gator rod, and I'm going to go in there and get him. And Johnny said, oh, no, Homer, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. But they just kept on. After a while, they finally Homer decided he'd go in there. And Homer said when he went in there and he gigged that gator, he said, you would have thought the end of the world had come. He said the water went 25 feet right straight up in the air. That gator went crazy. But when he come out of that hole, he had that gator on the end of that hook. And Johnny Flowers told that thing many, many years. He told it right up till the day he died. But when you get desperate, that goes to prove that when you get desperate for money and you really need it, you'll do whatever it takes to get it. Now, Javi knows. He's from Okeechobee. He knows about that gator hunting. But I'll tell you. A gator, well, see, they were vital in South Florida because a gator will waller him out a hole. And if it gets real dry weather, you know, you worry about the water you drink and stuff like that. Well, I've drank thousands of gallons of water out of gator holes because that's the only water in the world there is in that gator hole. And you'll see a little bit of green grass there and you'll know that gator's dug him out a hole. They can dig now. They dig. One more gator tale. I'm going to tell you one more. One more. One time we were building the fence around. How many of you have ever heard of the Corbett area down there in South Florida? Well, you've done. Yes, all of us have. But we were at the Corbett area. We were fencing it, the first time it's ever been fenced. I was 20 years old, and we were fencing that Corbett area. And we come up on this pond that was absolutely full of gators. I mean to tell you, they were working alive in there. Now, you got to realize that was 57 years ago, so 58 years ago. And so Homer said, let's go in there and kill them gators. And we had an old wagon that we was pulling along behind with a fence post and all this stuff on it. And I said, well, I'll sit out here and watch for the game warden. So they said, okay. So they went in there and dug them a big old hole so they could put the carcasses in it, you know. And they went to killing them gators. Well, after a while, I seen this plane fly over, you know, and pretty soon here he flew over again. I said, come out, come out. I said, he'll be here in a few minutes. I know this is a game warden. So they run out there, and we had this old wagon, and it had a box on the back of it. And they throwed them gator hides in that box. And Homer said, now, Iris, don't get off this box. You remember in the Bible where Rachel stole her daddy's household goods and she sat on the camel and wouldn't move. Well, that's the way I was. I was just like Rachel. And it was right out in the bald open. So when old Jimmy Lanier was the game warden, me and him's laughed about this for 50 years till he died. And anyhow, he come out and he said, what you boys doing? And they just standing around there. You know, they said, we just building fence. And I was sitting on that box right out in the sun. I mean, right out in the bald open. And then he talked, and I just sat there. After a while, he began to walk around and examine the wagon. And he looked at this thing, and he looked at that. And there I was sitting on that darn box right out in the broiling sun. Sweat just pouring off of me. And he said every now and then he'd come by there. And I still didn't move. I mean, I just sat there. This went on and on and on. I thought, oh, Lord, please help him not tell me to move. He never did get up enough guts to tell me to move. But after a while, he just kind of hit on the edge of that box, and he said, well, now, you boys be careful, and don't you get caught. So I know he knew what he was doing.
Iris Wall, how about it? Let me tell you. Iris was tired, and the crowd had dwindled down, and she wanted to leave. And I talked her into staying. Are you glad? And thanks so much for all the swamp cabbage and all your help. To Iris and her whole crew. Harold and Teresa and Carolyn, all of you. Thanks a lot.